Oh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Is that like an initiation?
Yeah, mate.
This has been here for 20 years and I've never... It's probably been used for a sight gag before, but I thought I'd put the clock there for you. It's a big pacemaker. It's good. Thanks for having me this morning. I'm not going to be really long because in the past I've been really long, so I'm not going to be really long. And it's interesting, I had a few ideas to bring, and when you sit through a service that is actually pretty good, you change all your ideas and think, oh, I should have talked about that and that. And so I'll probably do that anyway, but that's okay. So it's fantastic to see some of you guys. Some of you are looking a bit older. It's all right. Nothing wrong with that, is there? I've been speaking at a few churches recently because that's what I do, and it's interesting because you know, we're in the trenches with the children at the moment, and it's probably not the most you know, I'm not used to being in the auditorium. I'm used to being in the aquarium, you know, laying down. So it's good for me to be standing up and being in the building. So the aquarium, you know, the cry room or whatever it is. But what I was, you know, yeah. And if there's no cry room, you can go for a walk and have a coffee. It's good. I was briefly going to talk to you about a few things that have been on my... I'm not going to use that jargon. Things I've been talking to staff and students about. You know that I'm still at Churchlands. And in a year and a half, I'll be getting long service. Isn't that bizarre? Isn't that strange? And it's good to see one or two people here that used to be heathen and are brought to the Lord through my chaplaincy. That's a joke there. That's good. I shouldn't have said that. Let me give you the school invited Caroline, who's the other chaplain, who I think you officially should be supporting, but that's okay. They asked us to do a PD, like a thing on self-care for staff, on spirituality. And there's about 200 staff at Churchlands. And we thought, oh, yeah, that's quite interesting. And we kind of smiled. So we put up a form of who'd be interested, and we had to cut the numbers off. And so they've made this an annual thing, and I thought I'd share a little bit of what we did there and then how that kind of translates to what I'm doing at school. So spirituality was the main subject. And let me give you a kind of a dictionary-ized version of what spirituality is. Spirituality, the experience and reality of one's inner self or true self, distinguished from both the physical being and ego or false self. It is often associated with the relationship and experience of a constituting other, expressed in God, and I put gods there because we've got a few interesting people at school, or manifestation of the outside or natural world. It is quite a mouthful. The other one is spiritual practice. Spiritual practice, the experience and maturing of one's inner life that engages and discovers self and the other. So there's always this thing of a constituting other, which some people kind of found surprising. They thought spirituality was you, just it's your power and it's your kind of internal experience. But I split spirituality into three things. Awareness, authenticity and simplicity. The awareness one's quite a big one because most people, including me, probably half the time, are not aware. And it's a presence, I suppose, which is a thing that I've found very difficult to do, is to be present. I've often found it very difficult to be present with children. I don't know if you're like me, but when you've got your kids, you're sometimes thinking about what you're going to do tomorrow or what you did yesterday. And that's a thing that I've had, that's been a spiritual practice for me, to be present. And I guess with chaplaincy, that's a thing that I've had to learn as well, because often you have to be present to that person or that group, and it takes a lot of practice. And probably for the first 5 years I wasn't really present to anyone, although you do learn that, you do learn it, and once again that comes from your constituting other. Engagement with people, I sometimes, I'm sure like you guys, find it difficult to really deeply engage with people you're speaking to. Acceptance, I'm not wonderful at accepting people. So these were the reasons I was really iffy about going into chaplaincy, as you can see. A sense of control. I think I have a good sense of control, but I'm going to talk about kids later on because kids have taught me all of these things. And I didn't get all of these things until I had kids. And it took me this long to get all of these things from kids. So a sense of control, sense of purpose from being aware, self-purpose and then purpose of others. And also this, I think the thing that drives it for me is a sense of longing, being aware of a sense of longing and trying to tap into that. I don't know if anyone has a comment on that. I'm really happy for people to come add comments about awareness. Karen's just taking the tribe out. So just yes, life's teachers there. For the benefit of the tape, my children are being escorted out. I'll go into the next one. Authenticity. This is a big one that you can talk to kids a lot about. Because often, it's interesting, that the only grief I actually get at school, this is probably not this church, but from other Christian students and Christian parents, which is really interesting. You can ask me about that. I won't go too far into that. But the whole notion of being authentic, people talking about your true self, and there's a term that I've borrowed from a few people, and that about knowledge. And knowledge is not really a mass of information and experiences that you gain. It's partly true, but knowledge as relationship. Knowledge of being in relationship with people that you'd rather not be in relationship from and learning from. That's been a big thing for me. And I think when people are authentic to each other, which is a thing that I, like you, struggle to be authentic. You know, when you talk to people, and especially if you're doing this or music, people, and you're in a bit of a public eye, it's really hard to be authentic to people because you're thinking, what's your agenda? What do you want? What are you selling? And I think as a chaplain, it's quite an interesting thing showing authenticity. When I speak about my tradition, which is Christianity, I talk about breakfast cereal. And kids say, oh, why are there so many churches? Why is there Anglican and Methodist and Mount Hawthorne and other churches? And I kind of say, well, it's a bit like cereal. You know, you have your Methodists who are, you know, it's more your all brand kind of thing. And then I visited a church last week, which I won't mention, and they're more your Cocoa Pops. I reckon Mount Hawthorne would be just right. there's enough roughage, but there's also a bit of fruit. There's a lot of fruit in there. And when you kids kind of get that, it's funny. I don't know where it came from, but it's people being authentic to their beliefs and their tradition and themselves. And everyone that I come in contact that comes in contact with this church knows you guys are fairly authentic. So that whole thing of knowledge as relationship, and I guess it translates to purpose and vocation. When you're authentic with yourself, you can be authentic with other people. And that's quite a difficult thing to do. I don't know if anyone's got a comment on authenticity.
I don't want it to be my thought, but what about authentic versus being nice? Because I think a lot of us have been brought up to say only speak if you've got something nice to say.
Yeah.
Sometimes being authentic means not saying what you think might be.
Yeah, and that's probably one of my big interesting character flaws is that I'm a nice person. People know me as a nice person, and that's how I've got along in life, and that's how I've, you know, that's how I got married and convinced a bank to get a mortgage. All those kind of things which really do help you, but you hide behind your niceness, which really is, on one level, it's the authentic me, but then it's my inauthentic me, because sometimes it's hard to speak a truth to someone if you're being nice, and that's a thing that I've really had to learn. In my role and getting over your niceness, because nice is really nice, but it's not always authentic. Does that make sense? And that's a real thing with me that I've had to deal with. And some people are much better than that than me. But The last thing is simplicity. So we've had awareness, awareness of your intention. What's your intention? And paying attention. That's a really big one. I find it difficult with children. Like, it's funny, I call it being in the trenches years, where it's really difficult when you're tired, when you're stretched a few ways, to be aware and to pay attention. It's quite difficult. Being authentic. And the last one being simplicity. And being simple, as Claire kind of mentioned, is not kind of being thick or lowly. It's in the mix there, but in a good way. But once again, it's allowing yourself. I think simplicity gives accessibility. If you're a complex person like we all are, it's sometimes really difficult to let people into you. It's really difficult because you've got your own stuff going on, and you've got your own, you know, you've got three kids, and you've got this and this, and you've got so much. And I'd really love to help you, but I can't. I'm really busy, and you know, you should see my schedule. It's really complex, and I've got my own problem. That's quite a complex way, and that's normal. But I guess the challenge is to try and approach yourself simplistically. I'll talk about that a bit more. Simplicity giving focus. Accessibility, I think simplicity giving compassion and understanding. And I think Christ was an interesting model of simplicity, where compassion and understanding were his hallmarks. I think simplicity gives you depth. I think that the trap is the more complex and experienced and etc. you are, you're going to have a depth of knowledge. But often you feel like most of us have dug, you know, 30 wells, which are all about 5 foot deep. But I think simplicity gives you the chance to build one well 30 foot deep. That's another analogy that I've borrowed from someone else. So those three things we talked about with staff, and I talk about with students. And it's really interesting that this has kicked off once we had this PD. I've had a lot of staff. I probably have one or two a week. I have one or two that are regular, that have been coming for 2 years, just to talk about these three things, and to talk about it kind of couched in my tradition. And people often ask, how do you get away with being a religious person in school? How do you get away with talking about all that stuff? And I often preface it by saying, this is my tradition, this is my faith, and that usually gets you off the hook, gets you off the hook with youth care lawyers, because we're not supposed to go into school and apostatise and recruit and convert. But I guess it's me trying to be authentic, and chaplains being authentic, that we've got away with so much for so long. I don't know if anyone's got a comment on that. That's good. Actually, that's probably a good thing. And it's interesting, talking about spirituality, talking about your inner journey, talking about your inner self, having awareness, trying to be authentic and trying to be simple, you start learning of the character of God. That's how I've seen it. And coming back to the child thing, having children, because you can't get it from other people's children, because other people's children just annoy you. Let's be honest. I mean, you know, this morning you're trying to have a moment of silence, and you're hearing, you know, and that's just natural, and you're annoyed, and that's very, and I mean, I'm annoyed, and I own them. But the character of God, I've tried many, many ways to kind of learn the character of God. I've read, I've tried to be involved with a range of people, activities and ideas, but the only way I've got it is, it's not the only way, but for my head it has been the only way, is to have kids. And the thing that it's taught me, the glimpse that I've got, is patience. And I think more and more I'm bit by bit and crumb by crumb, I'm starting to understand God's patience. And from an early age, your kids make mistakes, they rebel, they have the small picture. You know, when your offspring's doing a certain thing, they have a small picture. This is all, you know, all this stuff, but the parent has this big picture. But if you think about the God and child of God framework that was set up for us, I think that really makes sense, because often we're always making mistakes, we're rebelling, it's usually an hourly thing or a minutal thing. Minutal, that's not a word. And I think for me, I've got an insight into how God is thinking and the kind of depth of patience. And the other thing is, when you're talking about this stuff, you can often bring up a definition of God. Because while people are thinking about, you know, spirituality and character of God, you're trying to pin a definition of God. And usually the classic ones are that I've discovered and talked to people about is combination of your parents, policemen, and Santa Claus. That's usually where the big ideas of God sit. And it's really interesting talking to people who you know, have very, very unchurched and un-everything of their definition of God. And usually it's a combination of their parents. Usually God's a slightly grumpy father or a slightly distant grandfather, and usually a combination of the two. But I like to talk to people about God being an ocean. When you're talking about spirituality, you can kind of talk in these kind of grand ideas, I think, but seeing God as an ocean, like we all, because we're on a shore, we all have a perspective of God. We have a perspective from our certain shore, and the water has a certain look and a certain tidal, etc., etc. But there's the concept of depth. There are so many depths of the ocean. There's so many conceptions of breadth of the ocean, expanse. It looks different in different places. Your relationship to the ocean. Some people surf or swim and they have a very relaxed recreational approach to the ocean. Some people make their living from the ocean. And so they, once again, that knowledge as relationship really comes into it. Weather variances, blah, blah, blah. You can go on and on, but really, no one really knows what the whole ocean looks like because you only get one perspective. So that's often an interesting thing to talk about. And so in the school, we're supposed to be a sensitive Christian presence, which it's interesting that chaplaincy has really exploded. When I started, there were 90 of us, and now there are getting close to 400 of us. And most schools have one. It's not really a big deal anymore. But I think that mandate of being a sensitive Christian presence is a constant challenge, and especially for real younger people coming through. Usually we only get in the paper once or twice for bad things, but often it's this notion that we're not being a sensitive Christian presence, that we're going in there with agenda, and students and staff and cleaners and parents and aunts and uncles and social workers still view us of having an intention, of having something to sell. That's why the cereal thing kind of works sometimes. And so talking about spirituality is a way of talking about God in a roundabout way where eventually you have to get on the subject. And we have some really, really interesting, strong atheist folks on staff, and most of them were at this PD, which I was really worried about. And they were quiet for about the first quarter, and then they kind of piped up, and for some reason they kind of connected with what I was talking about, and it was quite a respectful dialogue. And there's a person, I don't know if you're aware of, a philosopher from the States called Jacob Needleman. And he has this experiment where if you're having a debate, the two people have to, when they're exchanging ideas, one person gives one person their stuff, and before the other person can answer back or retaliate or whatever, they have to summarise exactly what this person has talked about. So the person has to listen, they have to understand, and have to almost tell you back what you've told them until that person says, yes, that's what I told you, and you get the next turn. And that's kind of what we did in this PD, which I wasn't expecting. So that was quite interesting. And what we also did with this spirituality, awareness, authenticity and simplicity, we tried to marry it with the church land's goals. Like staff have a certain amount of goals that they have to fulfill, and it's kind of like their charter. And it was really interesting how these things fit in. For example, we had like benefits of spirituality for self, because you've always got to have, you know, what's in it for me. We had the thing of effectiveness. The more in tune you are with yourself, the more you're in tune with others. Self-care, we talked about attention to dryness, and in spiritual terms, dryness is quite a rich subject. And connectedness, talking about that knowledge of relationship. And essentially happiness, that whole thing of living authentically, each one of these points keeps coming up. And schools like everything in threes, which is really interesting. And they've always got a triple bottom line. But I'd made up a spiritual triple bottom line. Because most businesses now have a thing about your staff, about looking after the environment and making a quid. And I kind of think spirituality fitted into that. It was addressing people. It was addressing the planet. And I think it was addressing productiveness, productivity. And as I was kind of thinking, all good things come in threes. And for staff, they could understand that because it plugs straight into their ethos. So that was kind of the course that we did with staff, and it was really quite interesting. And a lot of the stuff I'm now doing with kids from year 8 to year 12. And so it's a theme that we're going to kind of keep going. We're going to do PD for kids and staff kind of yearly. So that's the thing I thought I'd share with you that I've been doing. And it'd be interesting to get your feedback. You might think I'm barking up the wrong tree. I don't know if anyone had any questions on authenticity, awareness, and simplicity. You can think for a bit.
Are your students good judges of authenticity?
That's a really important one. They are, because they, especially if they know you're a religious worker, once again, they want to know what brand of cereal you're selling. They really want to know. And I think when you get outside people coming to do stuff, they're much more wary. When they don't have a relationship with this person, they think, oh, what's this person selling? And I think a good teacher is always authentic to their students. And you see it. You see some teachers that are and some that aren't. And I guess that's a thing that we've really had to, well, I've had to really work on myself, being authentic, because kids will see it a mile off. And once they think you're being inauthentic, you're kind of wasting your time. One. That's a really important one. And most people know when someone's pulling their leg.
Patricia's sister's a teacher. She said, you never smile before Easter.
Who, me?
To the kids.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. That's probably a strong one. But, I mean, I'd like to, but if I didn't smile before Easter, I'd have the school psych on me. But that's, I mean, that's authentically taking the season that's coming authentically. So, yeah. I don't know if I could be that authentic, but anyway, yeah.
Andrew, authenticity is really hard to turn off when you're doing this sort of work. What are some of the things that you've done or thought, or what's some of the processes you've gone through to strengthen your authenticity?
I think the main one that I've had to do is use... sounds a bit corny, but silence. Sometimes silence is the only way you can be authentic, because when there's noise and when there's agenda flying back and forward, or when you're doing this, it's really difficult. And it's only when I'm sitting in silence and attempting prayer, which I'm always attempting, just off the top of my head, that's the main way I get authenticity, when I'm quiet and when I shut up long enough to hear something or to sense something. You can read and you can do a whole range of Benedictine practices, which do help, but if you have no access to silence at all, it's really difficult to listen, A, to yourself, and then to get a sense of listening to God. I don't know if that's very helpful, but that's... And there's a whole range of physical things and complementary spiritual things you can do, and that I'm slowly learning, but silence is the big one. Yes?
I'm aware of the educational system in Australia, but I know in Canada, unless you're a private school, religion is mentioned at all.
Mm. For a state school, it's interesting. It's when I was at school, it was completely void, and you couldn't even mention it. Was completely, there was no, it was like a lot of the values had been written out. It was a time of, what's the word, not consolidation. rationalism. I don't. No, secularism's still going strong, but they wrote that stuff out so much. But now it's actually being rewritten back in, and there was that debate about ethics versus religion. But really, that's actually more of a private school experience. I've just recently gone to Albany to work for a chaplain exchange at Great Southern Grammar, and then did some work at the state school. And that's the debate they're having: do we replace spiritual religious information with ethical information? And in some ways, the two intersect, but that's more of a private school thing. Because really, in some ways, we have it better. We're much more freer agents. We can actually, we're recognised as, even though we're not doing chapel and kind of baptising things and stuff, because we're not qualified, which is good, we're freer to talk about this stuff. We have to be more wise and careful, and the older I'm getting wiser. We're in a public school. Really, you shouldn't be going on about God too much. But I kind of do, but it's how you do it. And it comes back to that authenticity again, or your attempt to being authentic. So really, that's not a concern for us. And I try and marry ethics. Like, I get invited into science classes to talk about stem cell research. People actually think I'm smart. It's hilarious. They actually put chaplaincy and religious work, a priest with intelligence, which is... it's been a good challenge for me. You're desperately on Google trying to get info. But on every conversation, on every debate, on every... and I have to knock invites back. It's really a... it might depend on the person and the school and stuff, but they know you're a religious worker, so they want your religious opinion, even though you're a bit frightened to give it. And it could be a speech. Maybe it's just church hands, but from the conversations, because I'm a cluster chaplain, which means I'm kind of in charge and make sure our local chaplains don't go to court. I've almost been there, and more of us are going to court for a whole range of legal things that have changed and mandatory reporting. But on every conversation, it comes back to spirituality and God, even if the person... you know, even if the person says, look, I want to talk to you, but I don't want you to talk about God. You go, yeah, no, that's fine. And then 10 minutes in, they're talking about it. And so it's not a problem for us, but I know it is a debate, which is an interesting one that we're looking at. Yes? Yep. Oh, okay. Yep.
So we, you know, my friends thought we had to make water bombs out of paper and we draw ziggurats.
What are ziggurats?
Oh.
I thought you said cigarettes.
Cigarettes. The ancient temples on the Euphrates River.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, and I still think the private system really get more bogged down than us. Because it's institutionalised, it turns more kids off. Like, when I went down to this school, it was just this enforced religion. And especially if it's Anglican, you know, which we go to an Anglican church, but, you know, it's still Church of England kind of, you know, eating habits in some ways, and manners. And that's, you know, you talk to... It's interesting getting in contact with the private system, because it's a bit of a generalisation, but in some ways we're in a really stiff secular environment, but are freer to talk about it, and kids feel freer to talk about it. You kind of... you know, your conversations are a bit like that. And it's funny, because it depends on the chaplain, because we've got some lovely chaplains who are a bit more head-banging than I am, and they get in trouble because they go, you know, you can't go into a school and say, oh, my name's Andrew and Jesus loves you and the sinner's prayer I'm going to print. And you can't do that. We still have chaplains that do that, but a lot of them don't last long. It's interesting. We've got a real influx of young chaplains coming in from certain denominations, probably more your Cocoa Pops denominations, where, you know, they are actually being authentic, but it's just a, I don't know, it's just a harder way to go about it, because the school, you know, the school sees it as inauthentic recruitment. Whereas I think chaplains now, you know, you are a religious worker, but I think we've just had to, you know, we're still a guest of the education department, and the education department ups its support year by year by year, because we're being good guests, but not doormats, I suppose, because we're still servants, but we're not doormats. And that, all these things I've had to struggle with. And also for me, I've actually been, I'm the world's worst evangelist. I've always been uncomfortable with doing that stuff, and I'm still very uncomfortable with God, and I'm upfront with that. And when people hear you talking authentically and honestly, they kind of start opening up more, because they think they kind of expect you, or they, you know, when you start a new school, they expect you to turn up in a smock and thongs and help with catering with some, you know, bread and fish stuff. That's kind of what they think. And in some ways they're right, and in other ways they're off the mark. And my challenge is how you redefine God for people. That's a big thing, because most people have been beaten around the head with it most of their lives. So yeah, that's the, and there's the whole tide which is starting to change about people redefining who they think God is. So, two more and then we'll get off.
Hmm. And I'll say that from my experience, I have no education about self-awareness in high school.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's interesting, because that, I think, through anti-bullying programs and all these kind of things, you can start bringing this stuff in pretty quick. I think asking kids, what do you want? Not saying what, you know, the iPod and all that stuff. What do you really, what really, A, gets you out of bed, and B, prevents you from getting out of bed? And when you start, I mean, that's the authentic thing as well, but it's being aware of what's my intention. How do I treat other people? How do I want to be treated? It's very, very basic stuff, but they're not getting it at home. Even really good families are not getting it. And I didn't get it until I was in my mid-20s, late-20s. And I have a wonderful framework, a religious framework to do it in. So I think asking kids, what's your line of intention? What do you want? And I guess lastly, giving kids the access to the three spheres of how they should view themselves. Their small story, this is me, this is my good stuff, this is my problems. The bigger story, this is my culture, this is my, you know, a lot of young people, a lot of older people don't realise how okay Australia is to live in and what's going on. And then the worldview. And I think that awareness of self, what's going on around me and what's my culture, and then out there. And it's that whole thing of knowledge as relationship. And I think once kids get that knowledge as relationship, they go, oh, I didn't realise I did that. I didn't realise that country did that. Like when Claire was talking about the political system, you know, you just kind of forget, you're unaware. So that's pretty much how we do it. And if you bounce around those three ideas of me, culture, and then cosmos, it's quite a... You've got to be trained to think like that, because I never thought like that. Not from my experience. So that's, yeah, that's how I do it. One more. Yes. Oh, no. It's a young person. Yeah.
I just have a question. Where do you see simplicity being in a high school environment where there's a lot of complexity built into the system, where everyone's trying to fight for marks and, you know, basically you're told that restriction is probably impossible?
Yes. Sure, there's an answer.
Maybe, like, how do you talk to students about that?
Once again, asking them, what do you want? What is your internal driver? And if you're going to be authentic to that internal passion or impulse or whatever, how can you make your life shape more around that, which means you've got to lop that off or reduce that or change that and make yourself more simple. You know, the TER, you know, is a focus at the end of your school, but is that the thing that's the real driver? So I guess it's that thing of asking your intention. And I guess reminding kids that they don't have to swamp themselves with so much. In fact, I don't say kids, I mean everyone, because staff are the same. Because then life, I've discovered life gets more complex. Schools are extremely complex, but I feel a bit complex at the moment. So it's that's how we do it. Once again, asking, what's your real you? And the answer that I can give, and you know, you can kind of couch it, you say the real, you know, the concept that I learned very late in life is the real me is the Christ in me. And that's a thing that I talk about a little bit, and that kind of, you know, people get a bit sus at that, but that's what I end up kind of talking about, your authentic you. And it's another conversation, but that's how I do it. I was going to end with one little quote, and then I'll get off. It's about attentiveness. And the question was, is attentiveness in small things more important than trying to grapple with the big things? So is attentiveness to small things rather than trying to grapple with large concepts and ideas the way to best nurture our relationship with God? On a day-to-day basis, probably so. The danger of expending most of our energy intellectualising about spiritual concepts rather than trying to live them out is that we can get enthralled with our own mental drama. And I love my own mental drama, right? You know, it keeps me going for the week, which is another fault. Our great questions, our breakthroughs and discoveries, and forget that the point of the Christian journey is transformation into holiness. And so much of that process depends on simply becoming aware of bad habits, weak places, moments of temptation, moments of doubt or despair, along with moments when we feel suddenly transported, infused with sheer joy, or filled with thanksgiving and connectedness to God. When we are overly busy thinking about concepts, brain candy, as one of my Buddhist friends puts it, this is not my article, rather than living the life in slow, incremental steps, we can easily lose our way and become discouraged. I think one of the most helpful virtues in the spiritual life is patience, which is a side effect of hope. There's something very beautiful about the intricate metamorphosis that gets set into motion when our whole being is finally oriented towards light. It's as though it's always been there, wanting to begin the moment we are ready to put our entire trust in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Thanks.
Thanks. You're going to sing one more, aren't you?